Could you start by talking a little bit about your regular job and any ways in which your routine and responsibilities have changed since the COVID outbreak?
Sure. So I have been at UCSD for 23 years, and I am a primary care physician. I see patients in my own clinic, and I'm also a resident clinic attending. So I have about 60% of my own clinic, and then I do 40% resident teaching where I teach residents in their clinic. And then I have 23% administrative roles as well, just in terms of running my pod, which is one of the outlying clinics for UCSD. And so my job is very, I think, traditional, where, I see patients regularly in a faculty practice that I've had, for 23 years. So a lot of continuity, a lot of primary care, and just following, following patients throughout their life. And then with the residents, it's great because, internal medicine is a 3-year residency. And so we always get a new crop of residents in, but then I follow them in their own continuity clinic, which is part of their residency, for 3 years straight. And at UCSD, we have about 26 residents. So it's a great way to always just keep very involved in the teaching aspect of my job. I want to say that in my career, I had never experienced anything like COVID. We had to pivot in how we practice medicine almost overnight. And I can tell you a vivid story if that would be helpful. I think our mandate for sheltering in place came on the 19th, March 19th. But of course, as institution, we were realizing what was coming down the road. So on March 15th, which was a Sunday night, we all got a urgent page to attend a Zoom call to be able to provide medical care through telemedicine. And UCSD had this capability already, but not many folks were doing it. Maybe the folks that were very involved and telemedicine and innovation were doing it, and we had done about 800 televisits in 3 years. So then that night, 350 UCSD physicians Sunday night got on the call, and they taught us how to do it. Just as there's just certain ways to do it. You actually have to have an iPhone to do it. So just kind of the routine basics, but also how to follow through with a visit, how to get a patient on. And just as an internist, I have patients that are 80 and 90 years old. So the statistics, it kind of blows me away. So on Monday, the 16th, we all had to, basically shut down our clinic from any walk-in and do everything telemedicine. And we did 1,200 telemedicine visits in 3 days. So
Wow.
the thing that we kind of tell people, like, in 3 days we did more telemedicine visits than we had done in 3 years. And then we by the first week we were doing 1,000 telemedicine visits a day.
That's
So I just,
amazing.
when I look at that, yeah, it's pretty kind of, I know, not to be dramatic, but it's kind of like, oh my God, like, whatever we needed to do to give patients care. And there was so much background work on this as well. Your day-to-day was happening, but behind the scenes, I can't even imagine the number of hours it took, because this meant also for all the residents, everything. They had to have an iPhone, and many people had Androids, whatever. So then we needed to get people iPhones, and then also it took a lot of work from the staff, because you had 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds that had iPhones, but you use them basically. But then now they had to be able to get they had to get an app, they had to download an app, they had to sign up for, like, MyChart, which is the email through the telephone, and the day of the visit they have to go through all these questions. And I am so amazed about I feel like seriously 90% of my geriatric patients have made it happen, whether they've done it on their own or they've had a grandchild help them or a neighbor. But to see it all come together, I literally have 9-year-olds that know how to do this now, and I just think it's pretty remarkable.
Definitely.
So, and then the other part of this is that with the residents, and you probably know this, kind of just being in a physician household, you know, for residents, the way we need to teach them is they go in and see patients, and then we go in afterwards and talk and re-examine. And we also have to figure out a way, how do we do this now on a platform of telemedicine? And it's interesting that the app that we're using allows the resident to go in with the patient through telemedicine, and then we can also come in on the call and join. So we can almost do everything similar. And I will be, I go into the office, but I have the approval to work from home. So I'll be in one spot. My resident, you know, we've asked the residents to work from home, and the patient will be in their home. So it's interesting how we're providing care and we're all in three different spots.
That's really
so I just think that's kind of neat as well. Yeah. And I feel like kind of each day, each week is different as the rules change, as we get to learn more in terms of how to practice. And I think what we also learned 4 to 6 weeks in is that, you know, there are still some visits that are very important to see face to face, and we allow those, but that people were delaying their care because of COVID. And some of the statistics were like heart attacks were happening like all of San Diego. I'm not saying this super accurately, but I'm getting this from my husband, you know, who's the ER doc, that you're getting, for instance, 2 heart attacks a day, but now we're getting 6 because people were delaying their care because they were afraid to go to the ER.
Right. Do you have a memorable patient experience, either indirectly or directly related to COVID, that you could share?
Let me think about this one. I think just generically, I do think that the conversations change. In the beginning of the conversations, a lot of them are about really, how are you feeling with all of this? Are you staying safe? Are you, you know, getting the support you need? You know, I think early on there was some scenarios that are so indirectly related, before we knew much about patients that actually had been COVID and we had exposure to, but they were just, they were very indirect, but it was before we had everything put into place about asking the questions and so forth. And it was kind of that early on before we knew really what was going on, just like even in the country, you know, how it was just like we were hearing about it from Wuhan, but it hadn't come to the United States. And there were a couple of patients that had come in for upper respiratory tract infections in the resident clinic. So I'm kind of indirectly related. And I kind of remember not even thinking twice about their URI symptoms, because again, nothing had really come to San Diego. It may have come to the Bay Area in California, or also in Washington, but nothing had come directly. And I remember it was just like business as usual. And then we got the call into our clinic 5 or 6 days later that the patient had come to us like with a little sore throat, a cough. We were just like business as usual. And then they developed full blown symptoms like 2 days after that, and then got tested and was positive. And then I remember kind of getting the call that all of us who were closely part of that appointment, you know, had to like get tested or had to at least call in about any symptoms. And I remember it feeling very real at that point, you know, where it kind of really meant like, oh my God, we actually had someone walk in our clinic with COVID. And that was probably, I want to say, like around March 11th, like before we went, you know, full COVID closure, so to speak.
Got it. In a lot of my interviews, doctors have talked about the strengthened sense of community among health workers. Could you talk a little bit about your experience with that?
Yes, I'm going to echo that 100%. There's so many layers within our own medical community, just at UCSD. You know, the bond has strengthened among all of us, really checking in with one another, making sure they're healthy, understanding that we can only give care if we're healthy. So that's a very nice teamwork approach, you know, and really seeing right away just how people still, like our staff, really, it's their job to help. It's their passion. Like, I'll give you an example. The way we work it in the mornings is we all have like a huddle. So it's kind of our, you know, beginning of the day. We start before any clinic starts. And then we also have to name off the people that are coming in with potential COVID symptoms. And then the nurses have to volunteer to room them because it's not every day that it happens. And but we have a protocol, and the amount of hands that get raised to room the patient and be there and, you know, kind of be there for their doctor and make sure their doctor's done and ready. It's kind of amazing. Like, everyone steps up to the plate, like, automatically. I've got it, I'm here, or I'll come in, or, you know, if people are getting sick, you know, we have to have more people come in. So that's really great. And then in the community, it's been, you know, so surreal, the gratitude, the outpouring has been amazing. Like, I'm a runner, and so I see signs everywhere. I see chalk everywhere. With thanking the healthcare workers, you know, we've had the Thunderbirds fly over us. We've had free food at work come to us from donations. We've had, like, you know, people in the biotech industry, people, there's, I think, part owner of Alibaba, who donated all this protective equipment to UCSD. And then Tim, you know, who's ER, we had two huge boxes of ski masks dropped off to our door so he can bring them to his ER folks. I mean, it's crazy. And then we also, at our own home, we've had people just drop by stuff, because I think we're in a little different scenario where Tim and I both go into work, and so our girls are home alone. They're older, it's fine, but it's not the scenario we're all sheltered at home, or there's adult home cooking the meals, you know. And so people have really reached out and just dropped off food, dropped off, you know, dinners and stuff, kind of knowing our situation. And it's so heartfelt. And then just people texting me from people I hadn't, you know, been in super contact with, and I'm still great friends with. I mean, just me and your mom, like, texting one another, reaching out. It's really amazing. And I've always loved what I've done and felt lovely about it, just, you know, because this is really what I want to do, is help. But to have this other layer has been really remarkable.
I actually wrote this next question before all of the recent protests, and I think you've touched a little bit on it, but do you feel like the pandemic has united or divided our overall society? And do you feel like that kind of strength and sense of community that you've talked about in the hospital, do you feel like that has translated, or do you think it's different?
So this is a great, and I don't want to get super political, but right. I have definitely found that like-minded folks think very much the same in terms of the science behind COVID, what we need to do in terms of a public health measure, and that we need to all unite really to for the good of the country, but also to really help the individuals at our risk, the older people, the people with underlying conditions. And I'm going to say this very generically, I have felt that all of us who think similarly are same, seem to be thinking politically the same. Yeah. And I feel very united in that aspect. And then I feel some other ways people are thinking that it's conspiracy, or that how can we allow our economics to die, you know, to just wither away. I actually found it, I feel like it's divided. My joke used to be like, if you wear a mask, you're a Democrat. If you don't, you're not. And I don't mean to, but very simplistically, it is very interesting. So it's super united, people that are like-minded and kind of embrace science and embrace the greater good. I feel like it strengthened that, but then it also oddly has been divisive.
Are there any common misconceptions that you hear about COVID among patients or colleagues?
No. This is what's really interesting. I have really found, and this is kind of getting really deep, but you know, when you're a primary care doctor, like, patients come to you, but like over the years you find, you know, somehow if your style doesn't connect with someone, you know, they'll leave your practice and, you know, go elsewhere or whatever. That's very, very, very common. And again, feeling super fortunate that I've been in my practice 23 years, I see such a consistency between, and my colleagues too. I'm in a nice little medical, our little pod, our clinic is probably 9 doctors total, like 7 that work like full time. And we all are so, it's crazy. You would think we were all brought up in the same household. We're very like-minded, which is great. And we're in the south part of the city, and we mainly serve the underserved, that's our mission kind of for our location. So we probably attract a certain amount, you know, certain type of physician. And my patients, I can't tell you how consistent they are about the importance of the public health measure, the importance of, you know, safety for all. Of course, they're worried about their own health, but they really, it's important for them to shelter in place for the good of everybody. And they're pretty strict. So it's an interesting observation that, like, really not one has said, oh God, this is so silly, why are we doing this? It's been like, you know, they're right there in their home, and they're like, I go out once a week to Trader Joe's. I go in the morning, and I, you know, I follow all the rules. I have all my masks. So not in terms of work colleagues or patients, not really. Everyone's been quite consistent.
That's awesome. And then obviously achieving physical health has to be a priority at this point, but can you talk a little bit about the mental health resources that are available to both health professionals and patients?
Yes. So it's funny, we're right in the middle of this study of integrating behavioral health more intensely with our clinic. So right now we have behavioral health co-located with us, meaning they have office space right on our floor. But it's kind of otherwise separate, but we refer patients back and forth and so forth. And they're also on standby for anyone that needs like care right there. So like if we have a suicidal patient or a patient that really, you know, we're afraid to go home, they're there for us. So it's been an interesting pivot again, because now we're all kind of separated, right? So we're not co-located anymore, because they're also asked not to come in, because they really don't need to see face-to-face, you know, because it's all therapy. So they're always there for us, and they, you know, they call in for the calls in the morning to let us know that they're there and around. And so we have a great setup for that. So and we've had them co-located with us for probably 10 years. So our patients also know that that's an option in terms of mental health. And then we have tons of mental health for physicians as well available. We've also been given COVID, what do they call it? Like every person at UCSD, physician, every employee has been given 3 weeks of COVID hours, meaning 3 weeks to take off that is paid, and not to take off like at any one moment. I mean, if you need to, but you know, we have a lot of young physicians with kids that now are not in school, right? I mean, how do you go practice medicine when you have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old and your husband also, you know, your husband may be a physician as well. So they have supported us in giving us 3 weeks basically of personal time off that doesn't, you get full pay and doesn't count towards your vacation. So that is a nice underlying, you know, sense of support. And of course, you know, we have full access to any behavioral therapies that we need, either through our insurance or through employee health. And it's very interesting. I have noted a heightened, you know, kind of level of anxiety, which makes perfect sense. But I feel when I'm talking to my patients, they have really done everything to control as much as they can. And the mental health part of it, you know, comes from our discussions, but I'm not finding it be like the tip of the iceberg or for any of my patients, like in terms of it's maybe only made them stronger, if that makes any sense.
That's incredible.
Because they're just controlling what they need to control. Yeah, it really is. I've always seen them kind of get stronger. And I have to say, I can't even tell you how much I am so inspired by my like 89-year-olds that are just.
Are there any things, not just politically, but as a society, that you feel we could have done differently to prepare for and respond to COVID?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you another kind of remarkable story.
Yes, please.
Is that, yeah, I do feel we could have prepared so much better, and it saddens me to no end because this is a public health issue, and we know we had it in our control to do these measures. I think if we had a unified voice, it would be so different. The story is about Sarah Cody, and I don't know if you've read about her. Maybe you can Google her later, but I did residency with her. She's a year below me. So she's the public health officer of Santa Clara Hospital, and she was the first person, first public health officer to call a lockdown of Santa Clara Valley. Okay, this is before Governor Newsom. So Governor Newsom did it on March 19th of all of California. She did it before, maybe a week or two before, or maybe like 5 days. She herself. So you've got to read this article. It's amazing. And she is like the calmest person. And this article, I think you could just Google it. And it's like meet the first woman to call, the first woman in history to call the lockdown or something like that in the United States. So she locked down Clear Valley because they were the first California case of a positive COVID patient that maybe had not traveled. I'm not getting all my data correct. But basically, they were kind of the first, like, oh my God, is COVID here? You know, kind of not from a direct traveler from Wuhan, so to speak. And she talks about how that evening she got the phone call, like she knew like her life had changed, and she called up two of her like mentors that held her position, like hired her, and she'd been in this position for like 10 years, and called on them and said, I need your brain power, I need your help. And one was on a ski vacation and said, do you need me now? And she said, yes, you need to come to me now. Like, right? Like,
right.
So this is early March or maybe late February, like February 28th. And then in this, the way the article is written, she's like, she knew right then, like she had a senior in high school as well. She like knew right then she was going to shut down her daughter's senior year. Like if she was thinking her senior year, her prom, and that she had to make this massive move. And then so everyone, and you have to remember, like, so Santa Clara Valley is where the Silicon Valley is. So you have highly educated people. It's a very affluent neighborhood. And they shut down hard. And they were a hot spot. And I will tell you right now, so I'm in contact. So I'm not in contact with Sarah as much. I mean, we're friends. But, like, one of my really close friends, like, who's my maid of honor and all that, is a surgeon at Stanford. Okay. And she says, as of now, right now, between Stanford Hospital and Santa Clara, which is their affiliate hospital, county hospital, they have 2 COVID cases.
Wow.
Because of this extreme shutdown. I have, in my hospital, I have 38. Tim has about between his two hospitals, like 100. And in our county, we have about, this is in-house, not even positive cases. So we probably have in our hospitals together, and I'm going to say at least 150 or 200 cases of COVID positive. I'm trying to do my math, 100, maybe like under 200. But because of this intense lockdown early, from a unified voice that people right. trust, this hotspot has 2 cases right now. That's, I mean, isn't that crazy?
It is.
And we have, you know, 200 and we're flat. And I mean, we're starting to open up and we're staying flat. So that's good, but we're not at zero. I mean, you know, one life that could have been saved to me, it just saddens me, you know.
Right. Are there any lessons that you feel you'll take away as a doctor from working during the pandemic?
You know, that's a great question. I think always listening. I seeing the divisiveness is like heartbreaking. And I think when I see how people react to the support they've been given, I'll give you another interesting thing. And we may have to say this very generically.
Okay.
UCC in an odd way has been considered like very supportive of our research efforts, but maybe not the best support of our clinical arena. But I think what I've seen, because UCSD, we are the only academic center in San Diego, and so we are about 15 to 20% of the market share of patients. But of course, our research and so forth is highly valued. But then the rest of our community is taken care of by outstanding community partners, Sharp, Scripps, Kaiser. But we have really been on the blood edge, so to speak, of testing. And because of that, we've been able to expand that to testing every UCSD student. Our plan is to test every UCSD undergrad every month so we can open up the campus. Wow. I don't know if I'm going off topic, but I think there's been a sense of pride and unity coming from the science that we're able to develop, mm-hmm. and us, being part of that powerful message too about health science and how we can maybe bring kids, because this is what's close to my heart right now. I mean, obviously what's going on, but is, I have a senior that I'd love her to get off to college. Mm-hmm. So I think what I've learned is the importance of unity and feeling supported. I feel like there's not that much you need to do to make someone feel supported, which is a bigger picture. I feel if we had one unified voice in terms of our leader, we wouldn't have this division. We wouldn't have as many deaths. And look at New Zealand, look at Australia.
Right.
It's just so consistent. So I think that's a pretty broad answer, but that's kind of what I've felt. It's kind of like, gosh, if what I've learned is the importance of support in terms of your patients, in terms of your community, and in terms of your workplace, how it can really change how people visualize what they're doing in terms of fulfilling and what we're doing for the community.